Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Stove Kraft Limited Q1 FY23 earnings conference call. This call may contain some of the forward-looking statements which are completely based on our beliefs, opinions, and expectations as of today. These statements are not a guarantee of our future performance and involves unforeseen risks and uncertainties. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Rajendra Gandhi, MD. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. I hope that all of you and your families are safe and healthy. On behalf of Stove Kraft Limited, I extend a very warm welcome to all participants on the Q1 FY23 financial results discussion call. Today on the call, I am joined by Mr. Rajeev Mehta, our CEO, Mr. Balaji A.S., our CFO, and the Orient Capital, who are our investor relations advisors. We have uploaded our investor deck and the earnings press release on the stock exchanges and the company's website. I hope everybody had an opportunity to go through that. In Q1 of this financial year, we have seen a good growth of 28% year-on-year in top line despite a slow start. Ours is a seasonal business, with the first and the last quarter being smaller than the second and the third quarters. During the current quarter, we took a price hike of between 3%-4% across product categories. The raw material prices are no longer as volatile as they were last year. We are hoping that they will continue to be at reasonable levels for us to be able to improve our margins without any further price hikes for the festive season. We still maintain our annual guidance on EBITDA margins, which is to protect the 11%. As you would have seen by our recent filing that we have forayed into physical retail, and I am pleased to announce that we have opened our first company-owned and company-operated retail store for the Pigeon brand in Fraser Town, Bangalore. Since then, the company has opened four additional stores in Bangalore, taking the total count to five stores. The stores will offer the entire range of products, including cookware, cooktops, small appliances, and the LED products sold under the Pigeon brand. It is an important milestone in the growth journey of Stove Kraft and will make us more accessible to the consumers. Over the next 12-18 months, we expect the total store count to be around 40 stores spread across the state of Karnataka. Now I will discuss the Q1 performance. The consolidated revenue stood at 275.1 crore versus 214.2 crore in Q1 FY22, registering a growth of 28% on the year-to-year basis. EBITDA for Q1 FY23 stood at 22.4 crore versus 22.5 crore in FY22. EBITDA margins reported was 8.1% as compared to 10.5% in the corresponding quarter last year. Profit after tax for the quarter stood at 8.1 crore versus 13.5 crore in the current corresponding quarter last year. PAT margins for the current quarter, Q1 FY23, stood at 2.9%. Now I would request the moderator to open the floor for questions and answers. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question, press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Praveen Sahay from Edelweiss Wealth. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my question. The first questions are related to the gross margin. As you had already mentioned, that's a 3%-4% of the price hike you had taken, and there is no further price hike you will take with the stabilization in raw material prices. Do you believe this from this current level, the current quarter, somewhere around 33% of gross margin to improve from here and go back to FY 2021 level?
If the current trend continues and if the prices continue to be as soft as they are or further correct on this, obviously this will contribute to additional gross margin. We already have seen an improvement in the first quarter. It's not that at the beginning of the quarter all this softening had happened. They have been gradually happening. We believe, of course, if the price continue, the input costs continue to be at the levels that they are, or if they go further down, there could be definitely improvement.
Thank you for that. The second question is about the channel mix, sales channel mix, like how much is in e-commerce versus offline contribution this quarter, and what your sense for an entire year. Is there any margin differential between these two channels?
I'll start from your last question. We are actually a margin. Margins are same across channels. We price our products on a cost-plus basis, like we have maintained. For us, in terms of contribution, e-commerce for the Q1 FY 2023 stands at around 25%. General trade and modern retail put together is close to 50%. 20% is export. And then the rest of 5-6% are the other brands, like Ilma and Black Index.
Okay. Thank you, sir. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vidit Trivedi from ULJK Financial Services. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir, for this opportunity. My question is on the guidance on the top line. I can see it is growing, but any guidance for the future that you want to give? And second question is, can you please explain why the cost of service is quite inflating? Any guidance on that? And third one is employee benefit expense. I would like to know your view on that because it's uneven quarter-on-quarter.
You are not very audible. We are not able to understand what you are saying. Can you repeat your questions, please?
Yeah. My first question is, could you please give us a guidance on the top line for the coming year? Second thing is that the employee benefit expenses are not even for the year. At some quarter it's 9% of the revenue, at some quarter it's 11%, some quarter it's 8%.
Okay. In terms of demand, I think we see that demand is back. We are expecting the year to have a good double-digit growth for us as a company.
Any specific guidance on that, like any number on that?
We'll be doing slightly better than the industry average.
Okay.
And in terms of your second question was on employee expenses, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you should look at it on an annualized basis because we have all our employees as, you know, as a Stovecraft, as a family, we are all part, and we don't have a single employee who is on contract, as a result of which our employee employee expenses are more or less even across all quarters. So depending on the revenue in the quarter, the percentages fluctuate, if that is what you were referring to.
Yeah, okay, fine. Thanks a lot, sir. I'll get back in the queue.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Deepak Lalwani from Unifi Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. Sir, I missed your comments on the channel mix, so if you could get.
On Q1 FY 2023, e-commerce was about 25%, general trade was about 38%, modern retail was about 10%, export was about 20%. Deepak? Hello?
Hello.
Moderator, can you hear us?
Yes, the line of Mr. Deepak got disconnected.
Okay.
The next in line is Mr. Ashish Uganlawar from InvesQ Investment Advisors Private Limited. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, thank you. Sir, wanted to understand, I mean, directionally, how we are looking at things, because on one side, we just had very hyperinflation, then we had some channel issues, probably on the e-commerce side also. And we have certain new ventures also adding to the cost, plus the retail expansion you're talking about. So how confident are you on the 11% EBITDA margin, and how does the top line look like in terms of growth? Because there will be a lot of price increase related top line contribution till, I think, Q1. So going forward, if the prices get adjusted, what kind of top line growth on a YOY basis are we looking at? So if some qualitative plus quantitative answers can be given, it will help us.
Sure, Ashish. So Ashish, like we said, you know, demand is back. We are seeing that the markets have opened up. All channels for us are doing reasonably well. We can confidently say that we will do double-digit growth for this FY. And double digit is, like I said, little better than the industry average.
So that would be what, 10%-12% growth, or is it going to be higher than that?
That's asking some specific number. Of course, the business has its own intricacies, but currently, you would have already gone through our numbers for the last quarter. We have grown at 28%. So we don't want to say that we will grow at the minimum at the number that we have grown, but we are seeing similar kind of growth. So we believe that we will be the good double-digit growth. So it could be anything between 15%-20% if you want a specific number like that.
Okay. And yeah.
And if all those initiatives that we have already initiated all start contributing, obviously, the growth rate can be higher.
Sir, what is the price-related contribution, this 28% growth that we have?
Of the 28%, 17% is volume, and 13% roughly is because of the price on YOY basis.
Okay. Okay. Fine. And regarding the costs, I mean, they have increased at least on a quarter-on-quarter basis. I can see that there's a decent inflation on the cost, especially the employee one. So any specific reasons for that?
Yeah, we have actually enhanced all our production capacities to meet the business plan for this year. And for us, the employee cost more or less is the same quarter-on-quarter every quarter. So there is an increase both in the number count, and of course, there is an inflation increase in what we price our employees. A little more detail, I think Balaji can give you a little more numbers that will give you insight.
Yeah. Ashish, on the employees' cost, you see Q4, we had the cost of about 248 million. And in the last quarter's call itself, we had explained that that was also impacted by an annualized reversal of excess provisions that we had to the extent of about 25 million. So when you adjust that, the adjusted number for Q4 would have been 273 million. From there, given that our appraisal cycles was in April, we've had an average 8% increment on the top line. As part of the beefing up for the season in Q2, our labor count had gone up, where there was an additional cost of about 15 million. And the rest, 4 million-5 million, is other additions across the company per se. So that is 314 million that you are seeing.
Okay. And despite the increases for the full year, we are confident 11% EBITDA should be there.
Yeah. So there again, what I want to highlight is that if you see, like we've been stressing upon, in terms of the top line seasonality, Q1 and Q4 are typically only about 20%. So our top line and the margins for Q1 on an annualized basis only 20%, so which means that that's a 5x number that we're looking at for the full year's story. As for the fixed costs are concerned,
what you see in Q1 would largely remain. Of course, in the larger quarters, it will be slightly higher, but it's not going to again go in proportion to the sales. So certainly for the year, we stick to our guidance of 11% EBITDA.
Okay, okay. So can I ask further questions or if there are participants, I can come back maybe?
Sure. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question. Before we take the next question, a reminder to all the participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Deepak Lalwani from Unifi Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you for the opportunity again. Sir, on your export order book, if you could give that number.
Yeah. So there was pending order that we are executing in the first quarter. So, we are closer to, we have executed almost 50 crores in the first quarter. And we continue to have good orders. So, definitely we foresee good growth this year over the last year on the export. If you want to know what is the pending orders, I can say in this quarter, we have about 40 crores of pending orders that we are executing.
Okay, sir. So on an annualized basis, it will be 160 crores, right? Pending orders?
No, it does not work exactly like that. So of course, we have manufacturing capacities and these are limited capacities. It's not that if we have to also cater to, if there is a very high growth in the domestic market, not necessarily, particularly the Q2 and Q3, there's a lot of demand from the domestic trade itself. So I cannot say that that could be the exact number, but there will be a very good growth from what we did last.
Okay, sir. Right, sir. Got it. And sir, on our margins, since the raw material basket has corrected quite a bit, are we sitting on any high-cost inventory from before, which might be liquidated in the next two quarters?
So there is two types of inventories that we carry, raw material and finished goods. On an average, the company always will have between 55-60 days of inventory. So we continue to have that inventory, but these price corrections are both ways it keeps happening. If the real impact of both, either the price hike or the price that goes down, I can say it is a lag of 2 months that you can see the impact.
Okay, so that way the gross margin will still be defended at 33%.
We hope if the price don't go, if there is again no change in the trend that currently we are seeing, then definitely the current margins are sustainable. There could be improvement.
Sure, sir. And sir, what explains the negative number in the other income, and what is the size of the ESOP cost in this quarter, sir?
So on the other income side, the negative number that you're seeing is largely on the forex restatement emanating from a mark-to-market adjustment that we have done for the forward covers that we have taken. So looking at the way the rupee has been moving against the dollar, we have taken some long-term forwards. So these forwards are not necessarily due to expire, let's say, in the immediate quarter. These are anywhere between 6 to 12 months range forwards that we have been taking. But however, on the 30th of June, we are supposed to mark them to the market rates. And given where the rates were as on 30th of June against the forward rates that we've taken, there is a mark-to-market loss of roughly 11 million that is sitting inside the other income there. And plus the regular forex restatement on the payable side that we've had, that is what you're seeing as the negative number on the other income side. What was the other question, sir?
And the ESOP cost in this quarter?
It will be roughly about 27 million. Sorry, 2.7 million.
Okay, sir. And sir, for these forward contracts, like what are these forward foreign exchange contracts for?
Based on our receivables, we have sold the dollars. Progressively, whenever we were seeing that the dollar was something, we have progressively sold these dollars. But as on 30th of June, dollar was higher than at the price that we have sold. Maybe today it is corrected, but we have then corrected, I mean, provided for the difference that is accounting standards required. So the net exposure that we have, whether it is, net of imports and exports, then either we hedge the dollar or we sell the dollar. So based on that, that we'll have to account for this. So maybe if the rupee becomes stronger, then maybe we'll have a positive of this quote.
Right, sir. As a general policy, what percentage of our receivables do we usually hedge from?
We will hedge only the net of our. See, there are two types of imports we have. Either it's a dollar import or it is a CNY import. So, CNY we separately hedge. And the net of the dollar, because we are a positive exporter on dollar, in terms of dollars, we hedge, we sell the dollar.
Okay, so we completely hedge the receivables.
Yeah, for the next quarter, it is a little longer than the quarter because we were seeing the dollar, appreciating a lot. So it's little more than a quarter. Otherwise, we generally have pending orders for about six months, and minus the likely import, where we require the currency to pay this dollar, imports, the net of that we hedge.
Sure, sir. Understood, sir. And, sir, lastly, on your on the provisions which you have taken in this quarter, is it largely done with for the large retail account we used to cater to?
Yeah. So, as far as the provisions relating to the large retail that you're referring to, by 31st March, we have provided 100%. You will see a 7.5 million provision that we have created in the current quarter. This is more from the standard model of the expected credit loss, which we keep providing. That is, so you will see that whenever as the sales increases and my receivables increases, there will be a small provision that we create because the model requires us to provide for receivables right from the first day of the billing, even before the credit period is due. So that's how the model works. So these are small numbers that we are providing more as an abundant matter of prudence. And whatever that was relating to that large retail of future retail, that is all provided 100% by 31st March itself.
Got it, sir. Thank you, sir. Those are my questions.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Harshil Setia from Aum Funds Advisor LLP. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. So how do you see the demand ramping up in the e-com channel for us?
So e-com demand is back to normal. This is the start of the festive season. We expect that the second quarter should catch up for the whatever shortfall we saw in the first quarter. We have had good discussions with both the platforms and we hope to recover whatever we did short in the first quarter.
Okay. And going ahead with our whole exclusive brand outlets that we are planning, what model will we follow? Will all the models be COCO model or we will go for franchisee operations also?
So in the immediate basis, we see that we would like to first establish the model ourselves. We want to do COCO stores, and like we mentioned, we will open 40 COCO stores in and around Bangalore in Karnataka. And once we have proven the models, we are open to discussing with partners. But as of now, we believe that we want to do COCO stores.
Okay. And with the acquisitions that we did last year with Kawa, how are we ramping up these acquisitions?
So both Kawa has been well integrated. The team is now part of the Soapcraft team. And you should see it is going to have the same front end as the LED. It will have the same channel. We believe that it will complement the current LED sales. And as part of that, from Q2, you should see some traction in Kawa.
As of now, are we seeing any meaningful number from Kawa or is it very minuscule?
No, it's very initial. We have just started manufacturing. You should see something from Q2.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Saurabh Surendra Shah from AUM Fund Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hello. Question for Mr. Gandhi. You know, as the acquisitions have been, you know, kind of invested in last year, also in terms of, you know, now you're investing in the workforce so that, you know, your full plans, your salaries are being done. That's slightly ahead of the output coming in. Over the next year, maybe not FY23, but for FY24, do you see a slightly higher growth rate at all? How much should we go for once you see better levels of utilization, both for expansions and the acquisition?
So the overall business that we plan is for a long-term growth. It's not that for the short-term immediate plan. Of course, the existing business takes care of the current growth. All the investments that we have done, whether it is in our manufacturing or the channels that we are expanding or the acquisitions, I can tell all of these are for the long term. For the 3 to 5 years term, you will start seeing results on all this.
So for next year, almost, you know, just to get a sense, maybe not FY24, but it's a slightly fuller level of utilization, what kind of top line should we expect from the current investment?
So it's a continuous activity. It's not that the whole investment plan is over. We keep on investing for the near future. So the current, all the investments that we have already done now can take us to 2,000 crores. But then it is not that we have stopped this. There is a continuous activity on expanding on our capacities or on adding new lines.
Right. And so just linked to that, once, you know, you have fuller utilization, you know, of what you have, say, invested just now, and, you know, for the moment, not considering what you would invest further, what kind of normalized margin level should we see? I know you've been guiding 11% in the last 2 quarters, but given that now you are, you know, slightly over the investment phase and next few years you should see more utilization versus investment, how much kind of margin should we sustainably expect?
Actually, the way you should understand this is we have always been guiding that we will protect post that disruption that happened in the previous quarters. We have been guiding that we will protect this 11% margin. It's not that we have guided the margin will be 11%. Our business, we want to protect at a 31% gross margin and so that it leaves with 11% EBITDA margin annualized. This is what we want to protect. Of course, as the top line grows and if the the cost remain constant, definitely the margins will be better than this protect what we want to protect. What we want to assure you that we will do all that is required to protect this margin.
Okay. So last question, any other areas you're looking to add now, given that you've made a fair amount of additions in the last 1 year, in terms of your mindset of what portfolio, you know, the company should have? Are there any other major pieces missing now, or you think now you're okay and, you know, it should be more of a volume growth from here on?
So we keep, like I said, there are, as a strategy, there are categories of products that we are in. Either we innovate on them and add in, or we add some categories of products which we currently are maybe trading or so. And whenever we believe there is enough scale and size in the country, then we want to get to leadership in that category. So then we keep investing on the manufacturing. So currently, of course, we are focused on all the categories that currently we are already on, but there are a line of innovations that have been lined up, and you will see products being rolled out in every quarter. So,
but
completely diversified lines. We don't have any plans for diversification. At the moment, we don't have anything like the Kava or the modular kitchens that we have done in the recent past. But within our categories, there is a lot of innovation that we are working on.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Arpit Agarwal from Electrum Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Gandhi, and thank you, Mr. Mehta, for taking my question. I have a couple of questions. First is, you know, if you can explain us on the rise of other expenses. I think they look to have increased significantly both quarter on quarter and year on year. So is there any one-off or is there any specific reason why the other expenses have gone up? Because, you know, we've improved the gross margin, but the EBITDA seems to remain same year on year. And even after improving top line, the EBITDA is lower quarter on quarter. So can you explain on the other expenses, please?
Sure. So if you look at year on year, last year in the same time, there was a lockdown, as a result of which our billing to e-commerce was much higher, and large part of the billing was in the south, because of which the freight cost last year was lower. Similarly, travel cost was practically lower, zero. People were not traveling as much. Related to that, again, service costs were lower, and because factories were also not working fully, maintenance cost was lower. So that is largely due to the last year. And another change was that last year in the same quarter, export number was lower, and freight for export is slightly higher in our case compared to domestic, as a result of which all of this came from 270 million to about 367 million. And, you know, the last part was that the sales commission itself was higher because of exports. Similarly, if you look at Q4 FY22 to Q1, travel cost is now back by about 1.2 crores. We had a savings from reversal of provisions in March 22, which is another 2 crores. And then, of course, like I said, export proportions. So all of this added, so 32.5 crore went up to 36.7 crore. That is on the fixed expenses.
So that is something, so, you know, for our purpose, this could be probably the run rate roughly, right? Obviously, a percentage.
Correct. It would be the run rate. The fixed expenses, this is the typical run rate.
So another question from my side is, you know, so like as a company, we have always mentioned that we have focused on manufacturing in-house, and we have been increasing the manufacturing, which obviously lowers our asset turns because we have done a lot of capex on the capacities. My question is why it should not get reflected in slightly better gross margins than your competitors, because your other fixed costs are higher. Otherwise, your OC will always be lower than the competitors. So if you just give me a broader understanding of what is the thought process, how eventually the leverage will play out because of your own manufacturing.
So I can only say that the volume will justify for all this. The revenue growth will justify for this. And the OC will also, in our opinion, will be as good as what in the past it has been. You should not look at our numbers in isolation with the first quarter, because all these capacities and the fixed cost, the way manufacturing works, is the costs are kind of fixed. But the business is seasonal. And like Balaji said, the first quarter and the last quarter are only 40% of the business. The majority of the business happen in the second and fourth quarter. So when you overall and we are not in the business of maximizing the margins. We want to protect our current position where we are, and we want to excite the target customer that we are addressing to. So we would still want to protect our 31%. It does not mean that our business is run on 31%. There are vagaries in this business where sometimes the margins can move either ways. To protect your 31%, obviously your margin levels are to be a little higher than the 31%. And if there are any advantages that are coming out of this manufacturing capability or any other initiative that we do, we pass on to the consumer, and that's, we would want to have a higher market share rather than only higher margin. Which we believe a reasonable, if we protect this 31% is a reasonably good margin to get to the right ROC.
So that would mean that your top line growth will be much higher than the industry for
a we believe that definitely we have been growing at higher than the industry, and we continue to grow at higher than the industry.
Correct. Okay. And sir, just last question on the stores. So you started going on your own COCO store. Ravi mentioned some comments on the earlier participants. So what kind of spends do you plan to have about 40 stores in next 12 to 18 months? What kind of spend will be there on those stores, because on the both capex and inventory side?
So of course it carries our inventory, and the capex, I'll tell you, the investment on each store is between 15 to 20 lakhs. Otherwise, okay, the inventory is all, it's moving very fast, so it's not very, very large.
Okay. So it's not a loss.
No.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. Thanks for taking my questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kunal Shah from Carnelian Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Hi, Mr. Gandhi. Hi, Mr. Mehta. This is Manoj here from Carnelian.
Hi, Manoj.
Hi, hi. So, just a couple of questions. As you mentioned in response to the question of last participant, that the current level of other expenses as well as the fixed expenses have come back to the normalized level. And this quarter, like despite of you making around 33% kind of gross margin, your EBITDA margin is at 8%. Now, if you have to deliver a yearly average of 11% kind of margin, I think your top line growth has to be significantly higher. And in terms of run rate for remaining three quarters, it has to be significantly higher top line growth if the gross profit margin remains at this level. So just wanted to understand, like, with this kind of expenses and gross margins, if you can help me a walkthrough from 8% to 11% kind of margin, which you would, as a company, which you would like to protect while focusing on the top line growth. So if you can give some insights into that.
So we believe that our overall expenses for the company is in the range of 20% for the AOP that we have a plan for. And the difference, the moment when there is a growth from this 275, even a 50 crore growth from here will bring us to that 11%. So when I say 32% of the 50% will add to the bottom line,
mm-hmm.
or the EBITDA.
Okay. So Manoj, just a simple math, like we said, Q1 is equal to 20%.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take the gross profit of 91 and multiply it by 5, that will give you about 455.
Mm-hmm.
And you take the fixed expenses, which is about 68. Let's take 75 as the fixed expenses and multiply it by 4.
Mm-hmm.
So you will come to 300. That will give you an EBITDA of 155.
Mm-hmm.
And you do a 275 times 5. So you will get a 1375.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do a divide, you will get 11.2.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. No, that is helpful, Mr. Mehta. So the other thing I wanted to understand, like last couple of quarters, if I see the kind of impact which we had on our margins, and if I compare that with your peers, larger peers who are there in the similar industry, they didn't have this kind of shock, where means when they were also dealing with this kind of commodity volatility. So is there something which has gone wrong specifically with us, like where our competition was not that much impacted in terms of the margin shock vis-a-vis us?
So for us, there are three events. One, I can tell you it's a combination of all these three.
Mm-hmm.
We had a larger write-off compared to the revenue that we have,
mm-hmm.
the loss that we had to take on one of the retailers.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing was the inventory holding. Supposing you are holding for a inventory for a longer time,
mm-hmm.
then this volatility also relatively will vary from when it will impact. And the third most important thing is, we still took a price hike in the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was a little lag in the, when we were expecting the prices to stabilize in the third quarter, the fourth quarter, but we had to further take a price hike in the first quarter. So
mm-hmm.
these three, majorly if you will see, if you will add all these three, we had an exceptional 5 to 6 crores only for providing for the remaining portion of the receivable.
Okay. So
and
that was like
about 5 crores. We wrote off all the inventory that we were holding for the COVID. So all this actually contributed to a lower margin.
It was a write-off of receivables or inventory, Mr. Gandhi?
Yeah, we have provided for 100% of the inventory of COVID, which was about approximately 5 crores.
Inventory, so I could not understand, like in a rising price scenario, why there is a provision on inventory?
So there was some certain inventory that we had procured, and we have both RM and FG. This was related to the COVID sales, COVID products.
Okay.
Like thermometers.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that we may not able to realize all of that in the near future. We have provided for 100% of that inventory.
Okay. So that was like just a one-time thing which has happened, which has impacted your margins, right?
Yeah.
One more question I have. If you can help me understand like your broader strategy in going through, means going to your own stores and now expanding and managing those stores. So if you can help me understand on that and like in 2-3 years scenario, whether you will be having this pan-India stores or you will be having your stores in means particular regions, how you are going to expand this?
See, we are a pan-India brand. Only because we are closer to the place where we operate from is where we want to learn. So the initial phase is that we would want to set up these stores closer to the place that we are, so that we learn from any of these experiences. And obviously, then the rollout will be much faster, and we would definitely want to reach out across the country ASAP. On being COCO, without doing this COCO, we believe that the learning can be limited. So, of course, the initial stores, all the stores that we have initially planned, we want to do company-owned, company-operated. Then, obviously, we will evaluate all the possibilities and also explore all, I mean, the other formats of the brand stores.
Sure. Thanks, Mr. Gandhi. Thanks, Mr. Mehta, for taking my questions. Yeah.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Rahul Ranade from GSAM. Please go ahead.
Hello. Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. Just one question, most of them answered. Just on these company-owned, company-operated stores that we are talking about, so what kind of products will be, you know, kind of sold? Will it be the higher end of even within the Pigeon brand that will be sold through the stores that we own, or what product offering will be there?
So this entire range of Pigeon products that we make, whether it is mid, lower end or the premium end, of course, as we progress, we would also want to have some exclusive range for to be sold through these exclusive stores. But today, it is a regular range of the entire product range that we manufacture and sell it to our various channels. It's also the advantage is that we are able to, I mean, the customer is able to access all these products in one place, at one store.
Okay. And just to understand pricing, how would it work versus, you know, if you sell the same product online versus in your store, there would be a difference, right? How would that be, you know, kind of looked at?
We continuously work to manage the channel conflict. I think to a major extent, we have been very successful as a brand to manage all the, I mean, the channel conflicts. So we try to bring uniformity in many of the channels, that it includes the retail channel that we are building. It will have similarity across for the consumer, the acquisition cost of, for the consumer, whether he buys from a modern retail, e-commerce, general trade, or these stores, it will all be the same.
Okay. But just, you know, for a conceptual understanding, would this exercise be more of a brand awareness exercise, or let's say in the medium term, are you looking at driving? Yeah.
It is to address that channel. We did not have this channel in our distribution, I mean, in the business channel. This is to address this channel, and of course, this also adds to the brand building exercise, but it is not limited to only the brand building. There's also a business for us, and the initial insights are it's quite profitable.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to all the participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. Next question is from the line of Ashish Upganlawar from InvesQ Investment Advisors Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity again. So, continuing on this COCO format, we are going ahead with. So, sir, what is the kind of top line contribution targeted from this, or is this in trial phase right now? And as you said, the profitability kind of, you are happy with that. So is it a model where you are still experimenting, or we have decided that we will be kind of growing this reasonably higher numbers?
So it's while both are correct, it's not that we have firmed up on everything, but we have a plan on which we are setting up these stores. And we believe that there could be some learning, but it is panning out the way we have worked on these stores. And so it depends on the size of the store and the location. So the variables are the rentals and the people cost. If it's a very large store, we'll have more people, and of course, the rentals will be higher. If it's in a very prime place, the rentals will be higher, and it will demand for higher revenue. So the initial insights, I said, very short time, is closer to a month that we would have started our first store, and maybe 1 or 2 weeks when we have started the remaining stores. So the initial insights are, when we do a match, it is quite profitable. That's what I said.
So actually, it won't be a burden on the overall P&L. That's what one can.
Other than the effect, there is no, on the P&L, it will be a positive.
Okay, so the economics will be maintained that the company has got to whatever the company has right now.
Yes.
Okay. So secondly, I wanted to understand, given the out of guidance on the top line that you mentioned, probably 1300 crores plus, we might be able to do this. So, and 11% EBITDA margin would take us to maybe 150 odd crores of EBITDA. And we are going to be full tax profit this year. So, is it a right assumption to make that we might be around 75, 80 crores of net profit this year as we did in FY21? Yeah, that's the math that I'm making right now.
So, historically, our first quarter has been 20% of the annual year. And the demand side so far has been as normal every year we see for the second quarter. We are seeing very good demand from all the channels. So if everything was as normal as it is, of course, all those assumptions fall in place. And with that, of course, with an EBITDA of 150 crores, we'll have all that. I mean, we are almost at that full tax regime, I can say. All the tax set off that was there is already over last year.
So roughly the numbers are correct. 75, 80 crores of PAT that comes with 150 crores of EBITDA.
Around that is okay.
Okay, so fine. Okay. And so any qualitative comments on different channels, how you are seeing the traction, maybe in exports and domestic distribution, e-commerce, something on that side, just for us to understand the qualitative aspects of growth.
We have seen very high growth in the first quarter in our GT, because also the relevant, again, in the Q1 last year, we had some disruption in the general trade and modern trade. Stores were closed and all that, but we have seen very high growth in the general trade. There was a little setback on the e-commerce side, because they were also correcting their inventories and that. And we had higher growth in the export business. If you want more detail, I can tell you.
So e-commerce was about 24% contribution on a sales side. General trade was 38%, modern retail was 10%, and export was 20%.
And the growth numbers for these?
Growth numbers, if you see, compared to last year, general trade grew by 70%. E-commerce had a degrowth of about 20%, because last year general trade was off and e-commerce was on. So while e-commerce as a channel degrew, we maintained and gained market share in most of our categories. Export grew by about 40% and modern retail grew by about 100%.
Okay. And the e-commerce growth, you would ascribe it to mostly the phenomenon of COVID that was there. And This is not something which is due to the disturbance in the channel. So that's sorted right now. Is it?
Yeah. That has nothing to do. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Praveen Sahai from Edelweiss Wealth. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the follow-up question. So related to the channel, your inventory for the each channel is also on the similar line, or is there a difference like e-commerce, general trade, modern? How is that?
Inventory for us, typically, if you look like Mr. Gandhi said, that inventory for us in the channel you are talking, or you are talking about at the company level?
At the company level, like e-commerce, do you have a higher inventory level?
No, or we have something like that. We have about 30 days of inventory and 30 days of FG and 30 days of RM. Typically, anywhere between 50 to 60 days of inventory we have.
And that's whatever the mix in the channel, it's similar.
Yes, it doesn't vary too much.
Okay. And the second question related to the inventory write-off. For how much is the amount for the COVID product you said inventory write-off?
That was 5.5 crores for Q4 FY22. Nothing in Q1 FY23.
Okay. And like earlier year also we had seen, related to some other issue, but there is an inventory write-off. So I can understand about the COVID product, but the earlier year also there is a write-off of inventories. So why write-off?
There was no write-off of inventory earlier. If you are referring to a receivable provision for a large retailer, that was only in Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4 of FY22. Every quarter we took certain provision. But inventory write-off was only due to the COVID-related products in Q4 of FY22.
Nothing in FY21?
No.
No.
No. Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Kunal Shah from Carnelian Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question again. This is Manoj here. So, Mr. Mehta, as you explained that this quarter one is only 20% of your revenue, so you have to multiply revenue by 5 and then that will give you 11%. But I'm sure that even in your expenses, especially other expenses, some portion, even in the employee expenses, like as your sales grow, some portion of those expenses also will be variable. In, like you mentioned, freight cost coming back, traveling cost coming back. All that is variable. So will it be proper to do that math, like just multiplying all expenses below GP by 4 and taking everything fixed? So just wanted to get some more color on that, our journey from 8% to 11%. We consider some of that expenses as variable, whether we will be able to achieve that level or not.
So the variable expenses are freight and marketing. Mm-hmm. Both are roughly 3%, mm-hmm. between 2.5% to 3.5%, depending on. Mm-hmm. And of course, this math was a rough calculation. Mm-hmm. I think we are fairly confident running the business that we will protect our 11%.
Mm-hmm.
And as we go along the different quarters, you will see that.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. As there are no further questions, we have reached the end of question and answer session. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Rajendra Gandhi for closing comments.
Thank you everyone for patiently listening to us, and we hope that we are able to answer to all of your queries. But if you have any queries, you can always reach us out. Or to our investor relationship team at Orient Capital. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of Oriental Capital, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.